Hello and welcome back to TWT FM, the podcast of the world transformed. Due to the events over the past week, with the tragic death of Sarah Everard, the police's violent response and the deeply draconian police crime sentencing and courts bill being pushed through Parliament, and the wave of protests that have followed, we felt it was right to pause the release of the next episode of our series on Leisure, and instead respond to what is at stake with the police crime sentencing and courts bill. Last week, The World Transformed hosted an event with activists and lawyers who spoke to the terrifying realities of what this bill entails and what we can do to collectively resist it. You can view the whole of the event on The World Transformed's YouTube and Facebook page. In this mini episode, we will hear some short segments from this discussion and also from TWT FM Seth Wheeler, who looks back to the 1994 Criminal and Justice Act and the broad coalition of groups resisting it. But first, we hear from activist and TWT organiser, Hope Worsdale.
Sarah Everard's murder, the violent police response to a vigil for her, and the subsequent mobilisations we've seen in the past week have been a catalyst for many important discussions on gendered and state violence in the UK. The reality laid bare by these events is that existing as a woman in this society means being subjected to violence. And this oppression is intensified, yet further erased in the public realm for women who are black, working class, queer, trans and migrant. And when it comes to the way the state handles violence against women, our justice system has failed over and over again. From the effective decriminalisation of rape to the state-sanctioned abuse of women by undercover spy cops who infiltrated justice movements, and a police force so fundamentally unbothered by femicide that officers pose for joke photos with the bodies of victims. Such an awful state of affairs demands a paradigm shift in how we organise society to improve our collective safety. One based on revolutionary change, not more bobbies on the beat. But we don't just have to fight for these demands. As Saturday night proved, we have to defend our right to speak up and fight back at all. Priti Patel is currently spearheading an authoritarian assault on the right to protest, the most recent egregious example of which is the Police Crime Sentencing and Courts Bill making its way through the parliamentary process. We know that our rights and safety as women will not be given or protected by the state. History has shown that they will be fought for and won through collective struggle. This policing bill poses a huge threat to our ability to organise and protest. But it is not going unchallenged. The last week has seen an explosion of activity to oppose the bill, headed up by Sisters Uncut and supported by a range of grassroots groups and campaigns. The rest of the movement must now extend its solidarity to these activists and lend their full support to the vital campaign to kill the bill.
From the event hosted by The World Transformed, Whose Streets? Understanding the Government's Assault on Our Rights, we hear from Zahra Hassan, barrister and founding member of Black Protest and Legal Support, Becca Hudson, organiser and researcher on prisons, race and empire, and Luke Smith, co-founder of Labour for Gypsy, Roma and Traveller Communities.
So in terms of how would the bill change existing law, the starting point is that the police already have considerable power, which they enforce all the time to limit protests. And these powers and the way that they are used by the police are already an affront to our fundamental right to protest. And what this bill partly seeks to do is lower the legal tests, so the legal thresholds, which are required for the bill, for the police to use those powers. So, for example, the bill would enable conditions to be imposed on marches and static protests where the noise generated may, and I quote, result in the intimidation or harassment or cause serious unease, alarm or distress to bystanders. The conditions the police can impose on static protests would also be widened. So this would include police chiefs being able to impose a start and finish time, set noise limits, and apply rules to demonstrations involving just one person. The police could also impose conditions to prevent a wide range of circumstances, including disorder, damage, disruption, impact, or intimidation. The bill further leaves decision-making on how to restrict specific protests to specific and senior police officers. And whereas before, a protester who, or currently rather, a protester would breach a condition if it occurred knowingly, the bill would change this to a breach happening where a protester failed to comply with a condition they ought to have known had been enforced. The proposed law also includes an offence of intentionally or recklessly causing public nuisance. And this provides that a person's act or omission which causes serious harm to the public or a section of the public or obstructs the public from exercising their rights is criminally liable. And the definition, egregiously, of an act or omission which causes such serious harm to the public includes where a person suffers serious annoyance or serious inconvenience. And a person guilty of this very wide-ranging offence could be liable to a maximum of 10 years imprisonment. It's also clear that the vague provisions and weighty penalties will most impact those already heavily criminalised by the state and who disproportionately face legal repercussions. For example, in January this year, the police were called to a protest staged by asylum seekers outside the horrific Folkestone Nappier Barracks. The protest saw 100 people walk out and some people sleeping outside in resistance to conditions in the building. The fact there was a policing response at all is reprehensible, but if this bill hands out greater powers to quell such actions or to criminalise those taking part, people with precarious immigration status are at heightened risk, particularly in a system where racist deportations exist. We also know that Black, brown and racialised people are subject to disproportionate charging and sentencing decisions within the criminal punishment system. Black, brown and racialised people represent 27% of those in prisons, despite being 14% of the population. And in the youth punishment system, nearly half of children incarcerated are Black, brown or racialised people. So the bill, with its penalisation of protesters, as well as wider provisions to criminalise Gypsy Roma traveller communities and the imposition of serious violence reduction orders, will deepen existing racial oppression. We know that police powers will always harm racialised and marginalised groups the most. Policing is institutionally violent and racist. And so if this bill becomes law, it will perpetuate the very oppression Black Lives Matter and this weekend's protests have sought to challenge.
Zara has covered a lot of the way in which protests are already subject to very, very kind of draconian and narrow scrutiny in this society, and the way in which we have seen over the course of the pandemic, increasingly a number of protests being subject to police crackdowns and police brutality. And this is happening in a context of a law and order government, right? Like, this should put to rest the idea that Boris Johnson brought in lockdown late because he's a libertarian that cares deeply about civil liberties. He does not. From the minute that Boris Johnson took office, he stood on the steps of 10 Downing Street and he said he would hire 20,000 more police officers and he would form a law and order focused government. And he's staying true to that promise in bringing forward this bill. So I think we can put to rest the idea that he is a libertarian in any sense of the word. Now, why is he bringing forward this bill? So what is the kind of wider political context that we're looking at? Particularly after COVID, we're seeing escalating unemployment and very precarious forms of employment. There are tens of thousands of people who are struggling to pay their rent and are in rent arrears. In London alone, I know it's a significant percentage of renters who are unable to make rent under the conditions of the pandemic. We're seeing from, you know, the kind of activism of people like Marcus Rashford, the sheer scale of the number of families who are unable to feed their children in this country. And this bill is not divorced from those problems. The government are telling us that they are going to deal with those kind of social problems through police and prisons, that they will meet poverty, that they will meet desperation, and that they will meet people unable to meet their basic needs with a carceral response, be it prisons, courts, or policing, as well as that being the response to when people protest those very conditions, being police, courts, and imprisonment. It's also important to say that all of the issues that I've mentioned are, of course, compounded and worsened when people are subject to racism. We've seen in recent research that came out just a couple of weeks ago that unemployment rate for Black people is triple that for white people after all of the COVID job losses. So this is, again, an issue which is compounded by other forms of oppression and discrimination.
One thing I would say is that I am sick to the teeth of politicians who are supposedly on the left, you know, proposing more police, more prisons. Communities like mine don't need more prisons and more police. We need community investment. We need grassroots sports like boxing. We need proper social work going on. We need, like, all these things. Look, Priti Patel comes on these streams and says we're all inherently criminal and things like that. Well, look, we've already had previous speakers allude to the fact that minorities are more likely to end up in prisons disproportionately and things like that. We can't all be culturally criminal, can we? We can't all be, you know, prone to, you know, criminality, things like that. The only thing all of our communities have in common is deprivation and poverty. And if you want to solve these issues, right, go, you know, cut the snake's head off, you know, at the root, basically, right? We need people to, you know, invest in our youth and things like that. And let's call this bill what it is, right? This is a pogroms bill. This is what it is. They're saying that they're going to seize their property. They're going to impose fines on them. They're going to impose prison sentences. You know, all of this is going to lead to more of our children being taken into the care system where our outcomes are even worse. And the criminal justice system where our outcomes are even worse. Like I said, we don't need carceral solutions. We need community solutions. We need investment and things like that. But nobody wants to listen to us. It's taken months now for people to come and say, oh, actually, you know, these Gypsy and Travellers and these charities about Gypsy Travellers might actually be onto something. I cannot believe that it's taken this long for people to realize that they're not just coming for our rights, they're coming for everybody's rights. And it's really critical that we all stand together, you know, people from the Black community, people from the Jewish community, people from our community, you know, it's from every single community. It's because they are coming for you next. If they're not already coming for you, they are coming for you next. Like I say, it really does. I never thought I would get to a time where I would be facing down legislation like this against some of the most vulnerable families in the country. People that when there was an eviction ban and the government's own guidance was to keep people in the same area, provide them with bins, provide them with sanitation. Michael Gove, a minister for the government, was evicting people from a camp in Surrey Heath. Like, it's just clear racism. The idea that transit sites and negotiated stopping aren't possible, but yet people can go to the caravan club on land that isn't approved for 28 days of the year. It's just sheer racism. The fact that we can have pontins come along and discriminate against our names, discriminate against our accents and everything else. And it's only sort of when, you know, politicians' names are included in these lists, even, right, that people want to talk about these issues. These have been going on for years. Like, the idea that people think we engage in hyperbole when we say our kids are going to be forcibly adopted. Our kids have been forcibly adopted and placed with non-Gypsy and Traveller families and Roma families as well for decades. I have had to sit in Parliament in one of the committee rooms and listen to a woman cry about how a niece was taken away from them. And they luckily got her back, but this is happening all the time.
You hear about the police bill. Say if you're not strong, you both get killed. Them kill you in the name of legality. Them kill you cause them take where you liberty. We have to kill the police bill. We have to kill the police bill. Them in a panda car, them in a transit van. With them riot shield and a big truncheon. Them use plastic bullet and water cannon. They fire CS gas on the mainland. Say true, them no want a repetition.
The new Policing Crime Sentencing in Courts Bill has arrived hot off the heels of the recent Covert Human Intelligence Sources Bill. which taken together undoubtedly marks a further escalation by the British state in regard to managing the political dissent of its own citizens. The bill itself contains a series of draconian proposals designed to frighten activists off of the streets, including possible 10-year sentences for creating a public nuisance or vandalising a statue, a £5,000 fine for using a megaphone near Parliament, a £2,500 fine or a three-month sentence for living in a protest camp, and even 1 year in jail for a single-person protest. It's hard not to look at these measures for what they are, an attempt to quell, silence and reverse the vibrant social movements that have erupted across Britain in the last few years, from Extinction Rebellion to Black Lives Matter to the recent mobilisation of women and their allies in response to both patriarchal and state violence. How these laws and sentencing guidelines presented in the bill will be implemented is as yet anyone's guess. However, it's certain that these will be tested, and sooner probably rather than later. When I first became consciously politically active in the 1990s, the then Tory government under Home Secretary Michael Howard proposed the Criminal Justice Bill of 1994. Ostensibly, the bill had been justified as a necessary response to the growth of the Free Party and rave scene, whose activity in squatting warehouses, reclaiming public space and challenging private property had provided the right-wing press with a series of sensationalist and reactionary headlines in the preceding years. While the rave scene had certainly proven itself to be a thorn in the side of Britain's ruling landowners and those who were financially invested in commercial nightlife, it can be in no doubt that its true target was a broader, self-organised, direct action culture that had dominated political protest in the latter half of the 1980s. After all, it was the mass direct action and non-payment of the poll tax that had finally brought Margaret Thatcher's tenure of the Tory party to a close. The proposed bill itself contained a series of direct challenges, not just to the rave scene, but also to others engaged in cultural and political dissent.
The state, its Tory psychopaths and Labour apologists are coming clean. The bullies and the cowards are ganging up on us. The carrot's been ditched. The stick works best. Disagree and discover that there's always someone on hand to beat some sense into you. This is justice.
Part 5 of the proposed bill dealt with collective trespass and nuisance on land, and included sections against raves and further sections against disruptive trespass, squatting and unauthorised camping, proposing the criminalisation of what had previously just been civil offences. This affected many forms of protest, including hunt saboteurs and the growing anti-roads movement, which was successfully then pushing back against the Tories' irresponsible and environmentally destructive road building scheme.
And they built the road and all that, fine. But, like, we fucking made it hard.
Part 5 of the bill also repealed the duty that had been imposed on local councils by the Caravan Sites Act of 1968 to provide sites for gypsy and traveller use. As such, opposition to the bill brought together a broad coalition of groups made up of ravers, squatters, sound systems, civil liberties organisations, New Age travellers, trade unionists, the traveller and gypsy community, as well as the anti-roads movement. And as the weeks drew near to the bill being made into law, the country witnessed a succession of direct actions and mass street protests aimed at halting its passing. Most notably, a huge demo on the 9th of October, attended by 100,000 people, that ended up in a riot in Hyde Park that continued well on into the late evening.
Among the bill's most controversial proposals are measures which would change a suspect's right to silence. A new offence of aggravated trespass would give police new powers over raves and New Age travellers and criminalise the activities of campaigners against blood sports.
After the breakup of the demonstration, thousands of young people stayed behind, dancing and playing music. In Hyde Park, they were told to move, and confrontation with the police quickly followed. The worst violence was in Park Lane. Young people crowded behind the park railings, threw rocks, bottles and sticks at the police, who charged dozens of times. A number of people were arrested and several were hurt.
Despite these mass revolts, the bill became an act on the 3rd of November on its third reading in Parliament. However, direct action didn't stop with the passing of this bill into the law, and the movements it was aimed at criminalising have broadly carried on, albeit forced to think through new and creative ways to outwit legislation. Ultimately, the forces that were brought together by their opposition to the Criminal Justice Act of 1994 would go on to lay the groundwork for the auto-globalisation movement of the late 90s and early 2000s, that would go on to shape the contours of radical politics over the following decade. Given the scale of the intersecting crises facing us, it's hard not to see a new movement emerging out of the social forces that this bill aims to defeat.
Less than a week on from the shocking police response to Sarah Everard's vigil on Clapham Common, it was revealed that, after initially seeking to rush the policing bill through in a couple of weeks, the government is delaying the committee stage of the bill, a decision apparently made at the very last minute. One can only conclude that it was the mobilisations of the past week, brought about by the impressively rapid organising of Sisters Uncut and others, which have forced this delay. The government's plans to further curtail our right to protest have been thrust under the magnifying glass, and many have been woken up to the creeping authoritarianism being advanced in this country. But the fight is far from over. The bill will return, likely sometime after Easter, and it is unclear what changes may or may not have been made to the legislation. The movement cannot allow this delay to mean taking our foot off the gas, but rather we must use this additional time to strengthen the Kill the Bill campaign, plan further mobilisations, spread the word and engage thousands more in the fight. The hope in defeating this bill comes in building a broad coalition of forces determined to fight against increased police powers. From Sisters Uncut and Black Lives Matter to Extinction Rebellion and the Labour Gypsy, Roma and Traveller campaign, trade union activists should also be alarmed by what the bill could mean for organising activities such as pickets, and should play an active role in this campaign too. Despite some political differences amongst such a range of groups, a coalition of this kind has the power to engage and mobilise huge numbers, and to win.
From TWT-FM, thank you to everyone who has contributed to this episode, and we send solidarity to those who have been on the streets this week. It's vital that as a movement that we support groups like Sisters Uncut, Black Lives Matter and Black Protest Legal Support doing vital work on the ground, and also engage in political education to expand our understanding of policing and the carceral system. For some good resources, check out the Abolitionist Futures website for extended reading lists, and past TWT events on our YouTube channel, such as Colonialisms and the Policing of Dissent, discussions on defunding the police and imagining a world without prisons. Tune in to TWT-FM next week when we release our next episode on our series on leisure.